In the wake of Broadcom's acquisition of VMware, significant changes have rocked the landscape of virtualization. With the new shift towards subscription-based models and simplified bundles, VMware by Broadcom aims to streamline its offerings for customers. But they face a huge backlash from small to medium-sized businesses grappling with some really quite large price increases. Meanwhile, industry giants ponder the alternatives to VMware, raising questions about the future of virtualization, the re-emergence of the cloud, and even cheaper open source alternatives, all of which have their own challenges. Our expert, Christian Mohn, helps guide us through the madness. Today, we're tackling the quantum shifts that have happened with regard to Broadcom's purchase of VMware. There's been some fundamental changes in the way that the pricing model works, which probably impacts almost all businesses because VMware is omnipresent around our data centers. So today we thought we'd have a chat about that. And I'm going to hand over immediately to my friend Christian Mohn, who knows a little bit about VMware. Check out the sign at the back of his studio.
Yeah, I can move over so you can look at it as well. Yeah. We're leading with that bias, I guess. It's now been approximately 100 days, I think, since Broadcom finalized the acquisition of VMware. It was finalized on November 21st, 2023. So it's been interesting, to say the least. I've been working mostly with VMware products, solely VMware products, for the last 15, 20 years. So this has been a pretty huge change. We've been through a couple of them before.
EMC bought them.
EMC bought them, right?
Dell bought them.
Dell bought EMC. But in those cases, things didn't really change all that much, right? It was more of a, okay, there's some new stewards, some new boards, some new CEOs perhaps. But overall, things didn't really change. Broadcom buying VMware and rebranding it as VMware by Broadcom is a completely different thing.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'm kind of surprised that Dell let them go. I mean, I don't know, was that VMware's choice or Dell's choice? But that seems, VMware are, like you say, omnipresent in the data centers, certainly across America and Europe. I don't know how it relates to, APAC and Africa and what have you, but the fact is they're everywhere. So why would a company like Dell allow to leave something as a property as hot as VMware?
If you look at the price that Broadcom paid for VMware, I mean, I think it was $82 billion, right?
What?
That pretty much finances the entire EMC buyout that Dell did before Michael Dell took Dell off the stock market and made it private.
Wow.
So the little knowledge I have about how financials work in big companies, it would look like to me that this is a way of actually regaining the money spent on buying EMC. So it pretty much has financed all of the buyout that Dell did of EMC by selling out the software park that is VMware.
Wow. Well, that makes a certain amount of sense. So it makes their business, impervious to debt for a period of time, I would assume, because they paid off all their debts, I would guess.
I don't know anything about how these things work, to be honest, but looking at it from a layman's term from the outside, it looks like that's kind
You're
of...
You're not a financial thing. Guru as well?
No, I'm not a guru at all. I did have some guru meditations on my Amiga back in the day, so that was error messages.
Yes, I probably did as well. Right, so Christian Lehrer, do you have any financial ideas on why this stuff works?
Nope, not the closest, but I'm completely with Christian here. If you just take a look at the numbers, this looks somewhat obvious. So I would assume that makes sense. And also, the question is how Dell wants to position itself in the upcoming AI, everything market of the future. If they really want to provide chips and server housing, or are they going to do infrastructure stuff for customers? So maybe that is also part of the decision making, but I think the financials have been pretty pushing in that direction, I would say.
So Christian, Moen, what else has changed? Apart from sticking Broadcom at the end of the line, you should probably put that on your sign at the back. You maybe have a little buy Broadcom off to the right hand side.
There is no way I'm doing
okay,
that.
Okay, fine.
No, that's not happening. That relic is going to stay in my office. I've seen other people from the old VMware gather bigger signs than this one. Joe Bagley, CTO in Europe for VMware, actually got the big VMware sign that was on top of the Staines building.
Wow.
I think I had it shipped home. His wife wasn't
too happy, but he was. Yeah. So. It's not exactly an ornament for the garden, is it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what has changed? I mean, there's a couple of big things. VMware by Broadcom, as it's now known, is basically the biggest software division within the Broadcom business, right? So that entails all of the VMware, NSX, Tanzu, all of those things.
And Tanzu is the Kubernetes arm, is that right?
Yes, exactly. And then you have, they also have this edge division, which is looking at how to do stuff on the edge, basically. Automated installs on edge installations on wherever that might be, which is then is it its own division. The end user computing part of it, which is basically what we know as VMware Horizon and Workspace ONE,
okay,
was split into its own division and has now been sold off. I don't know if it's finalized, but it's announced that they're selling that part of the business out again to a holding company. So that's being split out. Carbon Black, their end user, endpoint security solution that VMware acquired a few years ago, was also split out from the VMware by Broadcom division. Also with a name, I think, to sell it, but it looks like they didn't actually find a buyer for it. So they're actually merging that now into the old Symantec division.
Did you just say Workstation's been sold off?
Workstation, no.
Oh, okay, cool.
Workstation and Fusion is part actually now of the VMware Cloud Foundation stack.
Right, okay, good. Yeah, because that's where it all started. And then also that's the foundation of a lot of the technology they develop moving forward. Those things start in Workstation and move down to ESX, don't they?
Exactly. That's where I started doing it as well. I worked for a Norwegian bank for a while, and they were the first online banking system in Norway, which did everything online. And they needed some way of testing different browser versions on different operating systems and all of that stuff. So I actually introduced VMware Workstation for them to have different Windows versions and versions of Internet Explorer and Firefox and whatever as images that could spin up and test their online banking service with. So that's where I got started as well. VMware Workstation and Fusion, which is the Mac equivalent to Workstation, are both within the VMware by Broadcom part, co-joined with vSphere, NSX, Tanzu, all of those, Aria Suite, the management and automation platforms are all in there. So the end user computing part that's being sold out is basically the VDI.
Yeah.
And endpoint management stuff that was in Workstation ONE.
Wow.
The MDM part for iOS and Android management and stuff like that, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, and that opens kind of a new thing as well, because with that part being sold off, the motivation for Horizon and Workspace ONE to be that tightly integrated with VMware vSphere kind of disappears. So the EUC division and the new ownership of that would probably make that more of a hypervisor agnostic solution down the line, I would think, because it's no longer bundled within the same software company. The licenses have been split as well. So they're not bundled with that anymore. So they will live on for now, at least, moving in a not necessarily the same direction as VMware by Broadcom.
And that's, I mean, from a business perspective, that's not necessarily an unexpected element. Generally speaking, if businesses are buying large corporations like such as VMware, they will look at the core elements that are making the money, and then they will look at the ancillary elements that maybe are good ideas, but maybe not quite as successful, and they may well break those off and sell them off as individual chunks. So that's not an abnormal thing.
If there's something... No. And if there's something we know about Broadcom, that they're focused on actually making money.
Mm.
It's as simple as that. Their purpose is making as much money for their stockholders as they possibly can. That's their mission in life. It's the mission of every commercial company, really. But Broadcom is kind of... it's showing the world how they do that.
A bit, yeah, aggressive. Let's put it that aggressive way. In their corporate strategy, should we say, something on those lines.
Yes, yes.
So are we all going out and buying Broadcom shares? Is that what you're saying, Christian? Is that the next step forward?
If you did that 6 months ago or a year ago, that would be a really, really good mm-hmm. idea, because the stocks have not necessarily done as well as Nvidia, but it's pretty close.
Wow, okay. In gods.
And it's obviously done very good for the CEO, right? I just read some days ago that he got a little tip about $161 million extra or something like that.
Oh.
Because it was a successful year for him. So
that's a nice little bonus.
Okay. A tip. Wow. Okay, fine. I know that in America they tip a lot, but that still seems a little excessive.
They mostly tip because they don't pay people. This is not the case here. So, yeah.
Let's not sabotage American HR policy as part of the podcast.
No, but it's really interesting to see that from a perspective where I know VMware. I was using VMware also, but not being in daily contact with it, and just seeing it somehow being ripped apart and seeing the outrage also of so many companies and people really relying on that. And I think one of the biggest struggles that they have is that those changes have been announced and basically immediately applied also, or they will be in a very, very close time scheme. And I think that is causing so much disruption, crazy that Broadcom is doing it like that.
Yeah, and what they did is basically they took the entire list of SKUs that VMware had, which I think was 180 or something like that. And then they, as they called it, simplified it into four bundles. Right?
It is simpler.
Right? It is definitely simpler. Okay, yeah. But how many people are paying less in this situation, I wonder? You know, that's the
thing, right? So VMware has been on a journey for quite a while to try to move away from doing perpetual licenses to doing subscription licenses instead, right? As basically any software company wants to do. Yeah. VMware hadn't really gotten too much traction on that because all of their customers are used to paying for a perpetual license, and then they pay a yearly subscription or a support fee. On That's top right. of that, yeah. to stay current and get updates and whatever. So Broadcom basically took all of these SKUs, bundled them into four bundles, and said to everyone, from now on, it's subscription only. That's it. Everything is now based on the amount of cores you run it on, not the amount of physical CPUs. That being said, VMware introduced a limit on the number of cores you could do on a single socket a license a while ago, maxing it out at 32. So if you had a 64 socket CPU, you had to have two perpetual licenses for it. Given that AMD does a bunch of cores, that makes sense because all of a sudden you can run everything on two 4-node hosts instead and pay 8 socket licenses.
Absolutely.
Right?
That happened early on with VMware as well.
So basically, now it's core-based, it's subscription only, and that's it. And then you get these four bundles, which starts with VMware Cloud Foundation, which pretty much includes everything. right? So it's NSX, it's vSphere Enterprise, it's vCenter, it's vSAN, it's all of the components, pretty much, and an Aria suite as well. And then you have the level below, which is vSphere Foundation, which does not have NSX or the enterprise features in Aria, but it has Aria logs and Aria operations, but not automation. And it doesn't have NSX, and you have but you also have vSAN, but with a basically a smaller included storage space licensing wise in the base license. And then you have vSphere Standard, which is pretty much whatever vSphere Standard was from before. It doesn't include NSX. It doesn't include anything other than vSphere, ESXi, and vCenter. And it doesn't even include vSAN, so you can't and you can't even add vSAN to it. So you have to have third-party storage in that solution. And then you have vSphere Essentials Plus, which is a limited max 96 core small bundle meant for running three hosts or equivalent of that. And each of these bundles have their own different kind of add-ons to them. So you can add on NSX firewalling to VCF, but you can't add that onto vSphere Foundation because that doesn't have the base license for NSX in it. So while it's now four bundles, it's four bundles with different add-ons. So there's
some flexibility.
Still a bit of complexity regarding which features can you use on which version and which add-ons are available to which bundle. But all in all, this means that everyone from when their current support contract goes out, they have to buy or move to these new subscription licenses. And right now, there is not a transition path available for anyone that has an existing license, a perpetual license that has, let's say you have support for 2 more years. What happens after 2 years? Can you trade in your licenses and get a rebate on the first year or something like that on the subscription license? Right now, no. Will it happen? Could. We don't know. And then there's the other problem is, okay, if you have an entire data center estate licensed right now and you need to expand on it, you have to add new hosts to it. The new and the old licenses don't mix. So how does that work?
Truth. So you've got to relicense the entire data center again.
Right now, that might be the case, but we honestly don't really know. So hopefully, in the time frame in the next couple of months, there will be some clarity on how to deal with existing estates, expansions on those that already have a 2, 3, 4 year subscription or not a subscription, but a support contract on them, which Broadcom has said they will adhere to. You're allowed to use that. They're not canceling any support contracts. They're not canceling anything. But how do you coexist?
Sounds like they've done this too fast, doesn't it? They've sort of been in a situation whereby they wanted to get rid of the perpetual license because they knew if they announced they were going to get rid of the perpetual license, everybody would immediately go out and buy a perpetual license. So they had to get rid of the perpetual license immediately because they couldn't and go to the subscription model. But in doing so, they're not ready for all of the other eventualities that relates to.
Yeah, and when you have 182 or whatever it was SKUs, there's a bunch of eventualities.
No kidding.
Here,
yeah, absolutely. Right? Mm.
So right now you have a bunch of customers running a software stack or component of a la carte kind of pick and choose items in their data center that doesn't really fit any of the new bundles, right? So you might have someone that's running NSX but not running vSAN. So if you want to have NSX going forward, you have to go with a bundle that also includes 1 terabyte of vSAN for each core.
You're almost certainly going to have a shed load of customers running NSX and not vSAN because vSAN wasn't that popular. And if it was that popular, it was popular for people who couldn't really go out and afford a storage array, and they're not the people who are buying NSX.
We can differ on that one because vSAN is really, really good if you set it up right.
It is good. But I don't think it's got the foothold that maybe they were hoping it was going to.
Possibly. But I've seen a lot of vSAN. But I've been working in a very VMware-centric kind of part of the business, which also makes my view of what everyone is doing kind of biased because that's all I see.
Yep.
Right. The other kind of thing that's been a problem is that there has been a bunch of licensing bundles from before that was tied to Horizon, for instance, right?
Yeah.
So you license vSphere and vSAN based on the number of concurrent users in your Horizon VDI environment, which makes sense. If that's you're only allowed to run virtual desktops and the virtual desktop infrastructure on that cluster, right?
Makes sense.
And then you get a really, really good pricing for per concurrent user.
Yep.
When they now go to renew, they have to license everything, and then most likely buy the Horizon license from that other company they sold off.
That we sold it to. Yes.
The other example is VMware had a remote office branch office licensing scheme where you licensed the amount of VMs, the number of VMs you're going to run.
Oh, right.
Right. So one example I have is a shipping company. Right. They have 50 ships. They run one VM on each ship, on each vessel.
Wow, okay.
So instead of licensing four CPUs across two hosts and some shared storage things and whatever, they would license one VM, put two hosts out there on the vessel to get a redundant setup.
Yep. Makes sense.
And place that on 50 different ships. That means they would have to buy 225 packs of robo licenses.
Whoa. Yeah, yeah.
Now they have to license everything, right, with the new bundles. So this is my calculation, and I started off by saying I don't know anything about financials. So let's keep that in mind. But by my calculation, they would see a 1300% price increase with the new licensing schemes.
Wow.
So those customers who have been really, really good at utilizing the special bundles that VMware had, that's coming back to bite them in the tail now because those bundles doesn't exist anymore. On the other hand, all of the customers that were running VMware Cloud Foundation with everything VMware has on it, they can, in some cases, actually see a price decrease because the new bundle that includes everything they have costs, as a bundle, less than buying all the previous products from VMware.
Yeah, understood. Right?
But the thing is, for most smaller, medium to smaller customers, they are going to see a price increase. For the largest, biggest ones that run everything that VMware has, it might be cost effective.
It might be. But even then, it's going to be a sliding scale. To a certain extent, I think it's not necessarily, unexpected that there would be a price increase. The problem is that you don't expect a price increase whereby it fundamentally changes the business model of your company because of the fact that you were paying X for your compute and virtualization infrastructure and you're now paying X times 200% or whatever it turns out to be.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's corporate ransomware.
Those kind of changes makes companies, it requires them to actually recalculate what they're doing. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of smaller customers now who are looking at alternatives, right? Looking at something else. It's not an easy thing to just change your hypervisor. No. I mean, the hypervisor and converting the VMs, that's one thing. That's doable. But you have everything around it, everything surrounding it is where the problems come in, right? So be it backup, be it training, be it how you do day-to-day operations, all of those things fundamentally change if you change your hypervisor as well.
We can go into it, can I skip on to something else though with regard to the management of VMware first? One of the stories that came out more or less close to the start of this process was the fact that VMware has always been fantastic at, I mean, well, maybe there's a, been a certain slowdown in this sort of stuff, but in innovating, in moving virtualization forward, in the way that they design elements to great, create better networking because it's virtualized, better backup because it's virtualized, better storage manipulation because it's virtualized, and all of these other elements. But there was talk about the fact that they were just binning all of their developers. And is that your understanding, or do we still have VMware with their foundation systems going to try and push all of those elements forward and try and give us a better product?
Based on the NDA roadmap I've seen, I don't think that's the case.
Do you think that they are developing or they aren't? Sorry.
Yeah. I think they are. Mm. I think there's a lot of really, really interesting things happening going forward. I think there's... I mean, any acquisition this big will result in redundancies and a lot of noise and a lot of uncertainty and fear and doubt and everything, right? Mm. So, and that's always going to be the case. But looking at what I've seen on, as I said, NDA roadmaps going forward, I think there's still a lot of life left in VMware and their products. I think also it's a good idea probably to kind of refocus VMware a bit. I mean, they were 35,000 employees at some point, I think. It might have gotten a bit big.
Well, if you're going to sell off all of these other ancillary elements, then you don't need those developers related to the ancillary elements anymore.
Yeah, so, and there's a lot of overlapping functions between existing Broadcom things and VMware things as well. So that's kind of natural. I don't think VMware is going away at any time soon. I don't think it's dying as such.
No, fair enough. Well, I don't think it's possible, actually, to be honest. Like I say, I think it's omnipresent. So it's like it's more or less everywhere.
But the problem is that the new bundles kind of it's very geared towards the big, big enterprises, right? Which makes sense in a way. Mm. But one of the things that I think has been one of VMware's biggest strengths and one of the reasons why it's become so popular that it was, is basically that you were able to get enterprise style features in your home lab, in your little environment. You can start playing with it. You can start running it. You get familiar with it. You get grow your confidence in it, and then you move on and doing it in the
Christian
enterprise.
Christian Lehrer still has it in his home lab, I think, to be honest. Why the bother not? No, nope. He doesn't. He doesn't have it in his home. No.
Never. Actually, I never had a free ESX somewhere, something. Never, ever.
Wow.
Crazy.
How did you survive?
I know so many people relied on it and made their first steps in virtualization. And as you said, Christian, this is like the first shot, the entry drug. You get in there, you learn, you get familiar with it, and then you automatically choose this as a solution because you are aware you don't have that learning phase as if you would have with another hypervisor.
Are you implying that VMware is IT crack on that basis? You know,
no, I'm just referring to that method for basically every IT vendor nowadays because they want you to come in besides Broadcom and Microsoft for virtualization. They want you to come in on a very, very low price so you can get familiar with things. And then when you're in...
When you're hooked, when they've got you, that sort of stuff.
I'm comparing this to Ubiquiti, for example. To Ubiquiti networks, you get in really, really easy. You have a good service and then you want to extend like this and here, do something there. Yeah. And somewhere you're in a state where you say, what should I do else? Because now this works for me. I'm familiar with it. And if you have to expand it, you won't change your system easily.
Because you've already invested too much time and energy in making sure that it works.
But that's now the problem for a bunch of small customers, right? Because they're accustomed to using VMware tools. Now it might not, in some cases, be financially viable to continue to do so. And then what do you do, right? And most of these companies have done at some point some sort of calculation as what does thing A cost to run on premises versus running it in Azure?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Or somewhere else. That calculation has now fundamentally changed with the licensing pricing changes that happened from Broadcom. So those calculations will need to be done again, and the result might not be the same.
Yeah, no, very true. No, I completely agree.
What do you do then, right? So if you have a couple of years support left, you have time to kind of, if your existing environment isn't growing, you have time to evaluate, you have time to look at other solutions and possibly just move thing off-prem, basically because the pricing is... might not make sense.
I know, I agree. But I think this is, and I don't necessarily think this is a good thing, because I think the we've already had many years ago, I suppose, this whole sort of, oh yeah, everything's going to the cloud. You've got to send to the cloud, where there's this wave of IT managers and financial directors and business MDs saying, yes, that's everyone's going to the cloud. Let's just do that. But they don't really understand the implications of doing that. They don't really understand the design choices they need to make for their software and for their architecture. And they don't design for the cloud. They just move as a panic situation. And we don't want to be in that situation again. But with all this Broadcom stuff going on and everyone's sort of thinking, oh no, VMware is going to charge us the earth, we'll have another panic move. And I don't think a panic move is ever good for the business. Or for the way that, you know, the amount of money that they're going to have to pay to somebody. I do kind of wonder whether Intel paid Broadcom to do something with regard to cores. What do you reckon? You know, you think there's a gentleman's agreement at the back there somewhere saying Intel going, psst, psst, maybe if you can do something around cores, we can either ramp up clock speed and reduce core count, or we can ramp up core count massively, you know, that sort of stuff. Maybe there's a bit of maybe this is. Are they all masons or something? I don't know. How does that work?
Do you know who the CEO of Intel is?
Not off the top of my head. No.
No. Do you know Gelsinger, the former CEO of VMware?
Okay.
is it both Pat Gelsinger?
It might just be, right? Yeah. Actually saw Pat Gelsinger on CNN last night discussing the CHIPS Act. So
yeah,
still
$5 billion, right?
Yeah. So Pat Gelsinger was the CEO of VMware. He left and went back to Intel, where he came from before he joined VMware. So, but that's a few years ago. So I'm not saying there's any backroom deals.
No, that's right. But they're probably at the same club or something on those lines. You know, that sort of stuff. That's probably armchairs and a big roaring fire, and they sit there and with a brandy or something. I don't know how it works.
Back to the alternatives. What do you think? Are there real alternatives in that scale? Because VMware is an enterprise solution, and there are not so many virtualization enterprise solutions with that whole support scheme, with the consulting that is available basically everywhere in the world. What do companies do? Smaller things, smaller shops, they won't be able to jump over to any open source solution without having a huge IT team running it, right? Well,
so not necessarily a huge IT team, but I think it's one of those things where businesses need to have. It's the same in every environment, actually. So if you were to go say, right, okay, let's go to the cloud, you need knowledge on how the cloud works, because it's not the same as the way that you've done things inside your business. So if you want to go to GCP, or you want to go to Azure, you want to go to AWS, it's different. So you need knowledge on that. If you want to go to Red Hat Enterprise Linux or KVM or something like that, then you need knowledge on how Linux works, because again, it's not similar to the Windows systems you may have been working with. So knowledge is going to be the key thing here, and people will have to train up on that element's usage. That said, a hypervisor is by its very nature extremely thin. There's not really an awful lot of stuff going on with regard to hypervisor. It acts as the layer. As long as there's a half-decent interface sitting in front of it, anybody can create VMs and run VMs with whatever operating system they like. The challenge is, and we touched on it earlier, how does that integrate with everything else? How does the networking integrate? How does your backup solution integrate? How does your DR solution integrate? How does your, how does it integrate into your Active Directory domain? How does it send you emails in the event there's an alert? All of these things are very different. All of these things, people are very used to doing it the VMware way, because they built this massive architecture around it and have covered off most of those angles. I mean, I did a bit of reading. backup used to be a massive issue with regard to VMware many years ago. I remember at the start of this process, and so will you, Christian Moen. But the point is, we used to have a situation whereby if you backed up a VM inside a VMware environment, we then used to get IO storms on the underlying disks because of the fact that you had, I don't know, six VMs running inside one data store that was running inside one set of disks. And all six of those VMs would be backing up simultaneously. So all of that IO just went straight down to the underlying storage. And it couldn't cope because back in the day, you know, that we didn't have solid state disks to play with. So consequently, they were really struggling to be able to get that IO load. So everyone's backup fundamentally changed. And it became, oh, well, you've got to do one VM at a time. And then you've got to figure out, you know, or find other ways of working around that. So VMware introduced something called change block tracking back in 2009. And at that point, VMs didn't need to be backed up in their entirety. You just took the blocks that had changed since the last backup. And that doesn't exist on some of the modern hypervisors.
No, exactly. And you did it through an API that made it possible for the backup management software to stage this and spread it out toward, you didn't have to schedule VM1 at 9 o'clock and VM2 at 10 o'clock, right? You did it, spread it out and handled that for you. Basically, if you want to kind of look at the big picture there, the way that VMware did that with those APIs and change block tracking is the basis why a company like Cohesity and Rubrik exist today, right? So if you take that even further, I mean, Cohesity just recently bought most of Veritas.
Whoa. Okay, I thought that would be the other way around. Let's be honest. No. Veritas has been around for donkey's years.
So that's kind of what kind of impact VMware has had on the IT industry itself is that through providing change block tracking, they've created a third-party company called Cohesity that ended up buying a legacy vendor. Yeah,
amazing.
So it says something about the importance of VMware the last 20 years. And I think that's why the changes done by Broadcom and the swift rate of changes they've done has caused so much kind of anxiety and uproar around the world, because VMware has kind of been that staple that everyone has depended on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now it's kind of, wait a minute, now what?
Exactly. So the infrastructures, the ecosystem built up around that solid foundation, but now that solid foundation is now under threat. There isn't actually an ecosystem around any of the other vendors. Even Microsoft. It's like Microsoft have had Hyper-V for years, but they haven't really developed Hyper-V for the last 5 or 6 years. It's kind of stayed more or less static. There's been standard updates, but nothing particularly groundbreaking. And
They're doing things with Azure Stack,
of
course. But that's tied to running things in Azure, and then you have the Azure Stack on-prem to run your
on-prem stuff.
So they sort
of said, well, we won't do Hyper-V anymore. We'll just do Azure Stack so that we can then push you into the cloud to make more money out of you. So
basically the alternatives, if we're going to look at that, is the shipping company I mentioned, they can get away with running a two-node Proxmox virtualization stack.
And Proxmox is another virtualization solution, isn't it? So for those who don't know.
Yeah, it's basically KVM with some add-ons on them, right? Management add-ons. And then you can use ZFS replication between two nodes in a two-node cluster and put it on a boat or a vessel. That's fine. For them, that's
quite
okay.
Nice solution,
and that's a viable kind of alternative to spending 1300% more on VMware licenses, right?
Yes.
That makes sense. For a bunch of other customers, they can't really do that easily. So they're looking at doing something else. It might be some of the KVM-based things, and then you get into the same kind of issues you have with third-party support and integration with hardware, with storage vendors, all of that thing that doesn't really exist in the same, at least not in the same manner as it does with the VMware vSphere stack. And then you have things like Nutanix,
right?
Which is basically another KVM with their own management on them. But they at least they have an end-to-end stack that you can manage and you can kind of look at it in a similar fashion that you did with vSphere.
It was a hyper-converged thing from the get-go, right?
Absolutely, yes.
That's what was the idea in Nutanix.
So it's networking, storage, and hypervisor all built into one solution.
Combined. Yes.
But it's physical hardware, generally. You buy the physical hardware.
But they're transitioned more to being a pure software company and just doing things with OEM. So you don't buy hardware from them anymore. You buy them from HPE or Dell or whatever, and then you put Nutanix on them. So that's kind of similar to what VMware is doing as well. But if your main problem is, I don't want to pay subscription licenses, moving to Nutanix really isn't an option because they've been subscription only for years.
Exactly. And they weren't wildly cheap at that point either. So to be fair, it's always been quite cheap.
Exactly. So that's kind of.
Yeah.
There might be good reasons to move way, but it's kind of you're exchanging what you're moving from to what you're moving to in the same kind of manner, which
Nutanix has always been good want to replace your entire environment. You want to replace your storage, you want to replace your network, you want to replace your virtual hypervisor. If you want to do all those three things at the same time or build a greenfield site, Nutanix is a good fit. Mm. But most businesses do it in cycles. So they replace their storage 1 year, they replace their servers the next year, they replace their networking the year. And they do that cycle. So Nutanix doesn't necessarily fit in those environments. For those who don't know, by the way, KVM stands for kernel-based virtual machine. And it's an open source hypervisor you can just use. So you can just go out and buy yourself KVM, install it, have a hypervisor that works really well. Thank you very much. But it's Linux-based.
I was just thinking, all the open source alternatives, as we said, what's lacking is the things around it and the knowledge to really rely on it, to get your productions relying on that, because you won't be able to switch that if you have some production lines going on where every minute of outage costs you several thousands of euros. Just playing around with the virtualization backend to get that over, companies won't be able to do that. They have to get support contracts. They have to get all the ecosystem around it. It's a pretty hard decisions to make for some companies, I think.
And even large organizations don't cover it. So for example, you look at Veeam. Veeam can support KVM backup. Great. But they don't support KVM replication. So you can't do Veeam backup and replication with a KVM, but you can do backup at least. But even that's only in version 1 dot something. It's sort of... relatively, it was only released last year, I think in August or so. So these are very young products and they don't really have the complete suite.
That's something that's going to be required at some point, right?
Yes.
That all business of
Dover, NIS2.
Certain size, yes. Exactly. At a certain size, need to have a disaster recovery plan in place. Virtualization is one of those things that actually makes that possible to do in a proper way. But how do you do that on a hypervisor that doesn't have that ecosystem around it? So there's a bunch of, let's call it non-technical requirements that needs to be in place before you change something. And the hypervisor part of it is small. That's not the problem.
So what are we saying? VMware challenges, is this corporate ransomware at the absolute perfect level? Or is this something whereby we need to go and do something else?
Yeah, we have to wrap our heads around it, because every company really has to understand what options it has, what the implications are. And as Christian said, take a close look at how long your contracts are running and don't jump ship too early. Take a close look what your options are, how your life cycles are. And you will have to re-architect eventually. So take your time for that and take a close look what your options are.
Right, Christian Mohn, what are your thoughts?
I think the main kind of thing after 100 days of VMware by Broadcom is everything changes. The only constant in life is change, as someone said.
Very philosophical.
But don't panic is basically my to quote another book. Don't panic just yet.
Get a Babel fish.
Let to let these things run out for a bit more. 100 days is 100 days. Let's leave it a few more days to see what actually happens. I think there might be further changes down the line, which in the not too distant future on both licensing and bundles, and possibly also how you do trade-ins and level up from existing licenses to new ones. So giving, it depends on when your support contract for VMware Solutions goes out. If you have a year or two, try to take it a bit easy. Don't lose any sleep yet. It might turn out pretty well in the end. If you have a contract renewal up in the next month or two, it's going to be an interesting discussion with the accountant.
Yeah, agreed. And I suppose I agree with both those points. Actually, I think the don't panic and think about it is the ideal thing. I certainly wouldn't rush to the cloud because you're just providing yourself to a completely different provider. But I do think the cloud is a fantastic idea if used well. But I think the key thing for me as well is, you know, you might actually end up with more features and functionality than you were expecting from VMware, which is not necessarily a bad thing. So, but I would also say don't be scared of elements like KVM, like Hyper-V, like Xen Project, and or OpenStack, OpenShift. At the end of the day, there are elements that you can do as a business or you can investigate in that will help you in general anyway. So I would say, by all means, now is the time to go and play with these other technologies and see if they will fit your business. But don't just think about the technology, think about the ecosystem to support it as well. And because that is something that VMware has always been extremely good at.
Yeah, there is something to be said about people, process, and technology. It's a cliche, but it's still valid. Mm.